the news of the killings in Beirut came to our attention just after Rosh Hashanah. I first heard of the news unexpectedly watching the television. And I found myself instinctively thinking that I would turn off the set. I didn't. But I did leave the room. And I did find myself at the bathroom sink washing my clean hands. Now these rather primitive and elemental instinctive reactions of mine were done in the full consciousness that the rather hysterical reports that would be repeated at that early hour, quoting Arabs that it was the Israelis that had done the shooting, knowing full well that these were incorrect, didn't take political genius to know that the assassination of Bashir Gemayel and nearly 40 of his cohorts the week before would lead to some kind of revenge. It's the barbaric way in which justice is meted out in the Middle East still today. But I also knew at that early hour that the Israelis had gone into Beirut in order to prevent just such bloodshed. And they had failed. So that there was somehow a taint attached to the act, attached to the violence. I thought of the term miasma, which is the description of that almost physical odor which rises up from a swamp or a bog where organic material is putrefying, rotten. Tends to cleanse you before you can continue on your way. If you've been exposed to it, you have to clean yourself. Now that recognition, those instinctive reactions of mine, which I suspect in one way or another most of us shared, taught me a number of things. It spoke of the degree of involvement which I share, which we share with our people in the Jewish national home in Israel. We use slogans like "we are one," but it takes an act of this kind to make us recognize how intimately we are related, interrelated. The rabbi said, "Kol Yisrael Arev," that all Israel are somehow related. Here was proof positive that we can only hurt the ones we love. It taught me also, as I think it taught you, that we do apply a double standard to ourselves. We demand better of ourselves, that we know we can expect of any other group, any other country, any other people in the world. And since these events occurred during the 10 days of repentance during this period after Rosh Hashanah, as we look forward to tonight, Yom Kippur, I found that I understood with a clarity that I had never managed before the emotional need which had brought Yom Kippur to be. As we observe Yom Kippur, it's a congregational moment, a very private moment. It's a moment of stock-taking. We look at ourselves, try to imagine how we would seem if God would look with the one who was making the judgment. We take stock of our character, of our spiritual and moral character. It's a time of contrition and confession. Repentance. The key word is sin. Sin measures those things which we might have done but did not do, those things we need not have done but nevertheless did do. Sin is a measure of the failure of our lives to live up to the best within us. Inevitably, as we live, we detour, we deviate from the straight way, from the high road. There's the pressure of the everyday, of responsibilities. There's passion, there's ambition, there's cowardice, any one of any number of pressures, ambition, greed, callousness, cause us to move away from the road that we know we ought to be taking. Long since our people have shaped the Yom Kippur liturgy, so that it gives us a chance to pull ourselves away from the usual justifications and explanations and rationalizations of why we did what we did, to make ourselves look at ourselves coldly and analytically from the point of view of righteousness, God's will, to ask ourselves how we can come back to the straight road, to the high road. That's our Yom Kippur. But the original Yom Kippur had a different focus. It was not so much a private moment as a public moment. The original Yom Kippur was a day of national expiation. The ancient peoples, our ancestors included, were in many ways far more sensitive to some certain basic emotional needs than we in our society are. Their ties were tighter than ours. And they recognized perhaps more keenly than we do how the acts of others in the groups of whom we are a part can somehow leave their taint, leave a sense of shame or of satisfaction upon us. When some great act is performed by someone who is totally distant from us, a stranger to us, not related to us in any way, we may think of the act and find it praiseworthy, but we draw no satisfaction from it. And when a shameful act, a willful act, a spiteful act is done by that same kind of distant person, again, we are in no way shamed or made unhappy by it. But when someone who is related to us, some part of our family, someone in our family, someone in our community, someone in our religious community, someone in our country, the leaders of any of these groups perform these acts, we feel downcast, let down, and ashamed. And so it was that in the ancient world, the people spoke to days of atonement, days of expiation. The word Kippurim comes from a familiar Semitic root, which means to eliminate, to purge, to make oneself free of. They recognize that what we ought to recognize and do when the event occurs, that just as we take pleasure in the achievements of our children, even when they are adult and completely independent of us, so we can be hurt by their failings and their falterings and their failures. And so it is with our community. We take pride in it, we take care of our neighborhoods, we believe that we have fine cultural and educational institutions, and when these fail us, when those who govern us do not do so with a degree of nobility and forthrightness, we feel ashamed. Their acts cause us shame. What is true of our family and true of our community is true of our country. We take pride in its standards, we take pride in its commitment to justice and to political freedom. And we are ashamed when our country becomes a country indifferent to the poor, indifferent to the elderly, when it becomes an armed merchant to the world. What is true of our family and true of our community and true of our country is true of our religious community. It's true of the people of Israel. We have taken great pride in its achievements, in its universities, its research institutions, its kibbutzim, in the quality of life that it has produced. When there are errors of judgment, when there seems to be hubris and a bit of national arrogance, we are hurt by this evidence of the faltering and of the failure. And so it was in the ancient world that people sensed that the acts of others could leave a taint, a miasma, shame upon them. And so they organized a day of fasting. The priest came to the shrine and was responsible for sacrifices which were carried out in the nation's name. He uttered the prayer which said, "Salachna la'avon ha'am hazeh," forgive, please, O Lord, the sins of this died people. There were acts of fumigation, acts of lustration, of cleansing, of washing, boiling water. There were confessions in behalf of the nation. And the most dramatic act of all on Yom Kippur in the ancient world was that they would bring by lot, choose by lot, one of the goats from among the sacrificial animals. And they would tether it and they would bring it to the priest. He would symbolically place upon its shoulders the sins of the community. And then they would lead this goat out of the shrine, and they would lead it out of the city gates, and they'd drive it off into the wilderness. And somehow it bore with it the sins which had up to then clung to the community. They felt freed of guilt. And the priest washed himself and put on white garments. The community broke their fast, and the fast day became a festival day, a time of rejoicing. This day of expiation touched a profound emotional need. Through life, we take onto ourselves, we find clinging to ourselves, the sins of our community, the sins of our country, the sins of those with whom we feel kin. And in order to be able to walk out into the new year with some confidence, not bowed by the burden of guilt, we need a moment which expiates, which cleanses, which eliminates from us this sense of the miasma which clings to us. The problem with Yom Kippur, as it was developed in biblical days, is that it did not lead to reform. It led only to relief, to release. You felt better. You felt cleansed. But you not necessarily had come to face to face with what you could do in order to help the society, the community, your family pull itself together, raise itself, its moral and spiritual standard. The problem with the original Yom Kippur is that its focus was public. And so many of the sins of the community are sins for which we are all, to some minor degree, guilty, but which we cannot, any one of us, resolve. None of us can sit here tonight and say, I will, during the next year, make peace in the world. I will, during the next year, make the world develop arms limitation agreements. I will, during the next year, eliminate pollution or prejudice or whatever it be in the land. These tasks are beyond us, though we all feel somehow dirty by them. So it was that in ancient Israel, voices were raised which criticized the original Yom Kippur and sought to keep it and to somehow change its focus. They wanted to create out of the day of expiation a day of repentance. The day which would force us to look at ourselves and to ask ourselves what it is that we could do that might be done in the weeks and months that lie ahead, which would enhance the community, enhance the country, enhance the quality of life, the standards, the moral and spiritual standards of family. During the Babylonian exile, which was a time of defeat, a good deal of national confusion, the people turned to their leaders and they asked for explanation. Why has God deserted us? Why were we defeated? We attended the services in the sanctuary. We provided for the sacrifices at the shrine in Jerusalem. Each year we had the Yom Kippur, the day of expiation. Why were we defeated? Why did God turn against us? One of the seers of that time, an anonymous prophet, goes by the name of Deutero-Isaiah, tried to answer the name of God, this confusion. He voiced the questions which were being asked of him in this way. Why, when we fasted, did you not see? Why, when we starved our bodies, did you not pay heed? He responded to the people, this is the fast that I desire, to unlock the fetters of wickedness, to let the oppressed go free, to break off every yoke, to share your bread with the hungry, to take the wretched poor into your home, clothe the naked when you see him, not to ignore your own kid. Our tradition has a habit of avoiding choosing between opposite approaches. It is always recognized that to live is to be a human being, to be a human being is to be full of contradictions. And so rather than casting aside the day of expiation with all of its emotional release, which is so necessary to be, have your energies free for another year, with the challenges which you must face, and rather than simply turning the Day of Atonement into a day in which we berate ourselves for the sins which we have committed without really having any hope that we will be released and relieved in order to approach the new year, they wedded these two concepts. They were included in the Bible. The book of Leviticus includes all the laws for the day of expiation. The scroll of the prophet Isaiah includes the great analytic, critical sermon of this anonymous prophet of the exile. And so it is in our service on Yom Kippur. The rules which were observed in the Temple of Jerusalem, which for the day of expiation, are repeated at length in the afternoon service, tomorrow's afternoon service. And during the day we read as the Haftarah, this great sermon of Deuteronomy on the true path which God desires. What our people did was to retain Yom Kippur as a day of atonement. But if we look at ourselves and make resolutions, God will forgive us for the failings which we have made in the past. He will understand the failings we will make again in the future. For what he asks of us is that we try, that we dare to think that we can raise ourselves to a higher level of spiritual and moral living. That's all he asks of us. He knows that we are frail and fallible and human. He does not demand perfection. At the same time, it became the day of repentance, where we were focused by the liturgy on the sins, our private sins, the things that we can do, which will make our lives nobler and more worthy. And behind this wedding of two seemingly opposite approaches to expiation and repentance, the sin, guilt, there lies a peculiar, very special philosophy of history. We tend to think of history as the acts of great men and of powerful nations and of economic forces. We tend to view history as arrangements made between nations, powerful nations, to limit armaments or to make some kind of treaty which will establish a measure of peace. And all these things are, of course, important. But in our tradition, not by power nor by might, but by thy spirit, by my spirit, saith the Lord. In our tradition, the sages have always insisted that peace will come into our world not when the great powers of the world make peace, when all of the people of the world make peace within the context of their individual lives. But the truth of the matter is this, that many nations have made arrangements which they call peace only ultimately to make war. And many countries have attempted to limit armaments, but ultimately the arms have been built up again and stockpiled and used. These arrangements fail. Ultimately, the best intentions of those who govern fail if, God willing, they have good intentions, because people, you and I, must provide the context, the willingness, the sensitivity, which will allow nations not to make war against nations, which will allow governments to live together without fearing that some other government wants the prosperity, wants the land, wants the economy which is theirs. Ultimately, we will make peace in the world. If we can make peace in our homes, we will love our children and encourage them and be patient with them, and so teach them in turn to be open and to be sensitive and to be loving. We raise them so that their shell is not hardened and they're not filled with defenses, keeping up their fists against the world, being causes of anger and belligerence. The test of peace, my friends, begins in our own hearts. That's part of the lesson. That's built into Yom Kippur. The original Yom Kippur then is a public day, day of expiation and day of release. Yom Kippur, as it was developed in our tradition, was that and more. The day of repentance, the afflicting of the soul, of confession. And as this day was shaped and sculpted, a different form of ritual of ceremony was developed. The original Yom Kippur was a single observance, which began with sacrifice and ended with a scapegoat being driven off into the wilderness and led to the